Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome you all to today's edition of All Sides Weekend, where we talk about the arts and culture in Central Ohio. My two guests today are now based in Central Ohio, but their careers have certainly an international reach. I am delighted to welcome Joanna Frankel to the show. Joanna
Thank you so
is
much.
The concertmaster of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, and she is going to explain to us later what that means.
Yes.
Joanna will play Paganini's violin, the violin that belonged to Niccolo Paganini, that is coming to Columbus from the city of Genoa. The violin is called Il Canone, the canon. We'll ask you about that, too. You will play that in concert, I believe it's May 15th,
yes,
in the Ohio Theater with the Columbus Symphony. And I am delighted to welcome and to officially welcome to Columbus Johanna Burton. Ms. Burton is the new director of the Wexner Center for the Arts here in Columbus. And talk about an international reach. All of us here are spoiled because we walk or drive down High Street and we see it all the time. And we go to the movies there and we see exhibitions and installations and hear concerts there. But they talk about the Wexner Center in Europe and South America and anywhere where people care about art. So Johanna Burton is here to run that show for us, and we welcome you to Columbus. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chris.
You were talking a little bit off the mic that you have finally been able to close on a house and you're gathering your family to bring them to Columbus. You yourself have been here, I think, only for 6 to 8 weeks so far.
That's right.
You were very generous to come in today when you're literally still unpacking your bags. But I imagine you've already put in a lot of 12 and 13 hour days at least over on
those are the good days.
These are the good days. That's right. Can you tell us, you come to us from a very distinguished Museum of Modern Art, I believe, in New York.
The New Museum in
right.
New York. Yes.
What was your job there?
At the New Museum, which is only slightly older than the Wexner, it's just celebrated its 40th anniversary. I was the Keith Haring Director and Curator of Education and Public Engagement, which is a really unique position within the field. So in addition to running all of our education programs, I was also a curator at the museum and ran a residency program and a anthology critical series that we published out of the museum.
It sounds from the way you described it, just the title you gave me of that job, that it was really your job to bring the museum to the community, to really
Absolutely.
Bring people in and get the museum out. Is that fair?
That's totally fair. And I think, you know, one reason that the fit with the Wex is so good or feels so good immediately is that the Wexner has always been positioned as a kind of central hub for this community, for OSU, for Columbus, for Central Ohio, and I think nationally and internationally. But I'm really excited to even do more of that work. And I think the city is one that feels a kind of civic responsibility to do that work, too. So I felt really welcomed in that mission already.
There's pride in being a Buckeye, but there's a lot of pride of having the Wexner Center in the community, too.
Yes,
there's a lot of buy-in already and has been for a lot of years. And I'm really looking forward to see what you, with someone with your background, is going to do to make that bigger and more
yeah.
and greater. And I know that's going to be a challenge for you as well. Johanna Frankel, you have a 13-month-old at home, so you're tired all the time, but you're also playing brilliantly. I mentioned that you are the concertmaster of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, and I need to have you explain what that means.
Yes, of course. In a classical music setting, in a symphony orchestra, there's the first violinist called the concertmaster. As each section has a principal, basically a leader of that section, the concertmaster is first and foremost the leader of the first violin section. But over and above that, the concertmaster serves as a bit of an artistic conduit for what the conductor's musical ideas are. So while Rosen is quite a commanding, Rosen Milanoff, our amazing music director, while he's quite a commanding conductor on the podium and it's very clear what he wants, he's not actually ever making any sound. And so one of my really purposes is to direct really that production of sound. So everyone from a trumpet player to a timpanist to the string sections could possibly watch me to see where that sound might happen. Obviously, people have lots of different parts to play, but I'm trying to clearly get that message out there in terms of his musical idea in a physical way.
You have to then know everybody else's part, including your own. Is that fair?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I do a lot of score study, as you might imagine. I try to really know, obviously, when we get to the first rehearsal for a concert cycle, I might know my part almost by heart, so that I'm actually not as much focusing on playing my notes than trying to really create something bigger to fit and have all the sections fit together in kind of this larger scheme, which is the vision of the music director.
Joanna's performance of Beethoven's Violin Concerto, conducted by Russin Milanov with the Columbus Symphony, will be broadcast at 1 p.m. on May 12th, Mother's Day, here on Classical 101, our sister station. More on that anon. You're going to be playing you play a very old violin. Yours is 1819.
Yes.
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 And you're playing Paganini's violin. I think he was born that year.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yes. I think that sounds about right. Yes, I play an Italian instrument. It's a Gaetano Vernaccia instrument. It was made in Naples in 1819. So, about 100 years after what they consider the golden age of, the craftsmanship in Cremona with all these, Stradivariuses. I guess Stradivari instruments were created, but it has a bit of a warmer tone than a lot of Italian instruments.
It's called il canone, the canon, they call it.
Yes, the canon. The Paganini violin is called the canon. Yes,
right, yes,
yes.
And that's apparently you're going to be surrounded by security guards and big tough looking guys while you play this violin because it's so valuable.
Yes, it's a national treasure. It's really an international treasure, but it was bequeathed by Paganini to the city of Genoa, so it's something that that city and the country holds very, very dear.
Genoa is a sister city to Columbus,
yes.
So that the mayor of Genoa and such are coming along with the violin,
yes,
which will be exhibited at the Columbus Museum of Art. Carl McKinnon, can you give us a little sample of Paganini's violin? This violin that belonged to Niccolò Paganini and was bequeathed by him to the city of Genoa will be on display at the Columbus Museum of Art from May 11th, and Johanna Frankel will play it in the Ohio Theater, heavily guarded, I assume. They'll probably have a couple of cops sitting in the orchestra on May 15th, and we'll tell you a little bit more about the program there as well. Johanna Burton, I'm curious to know, I know you visited the Wexner Center a number of times before you moved here to take over the directorship. What was your impression, your first visit?
Well, I should say that I visited the Wexner Center well before this job became a possibility. As an art history graduate student, I found the Wexner to be one of the beacons of experimental contemporary art. And so I actually flew to Columbus a number of times many years ago to see shows that were happening at the Wex. I also had it heavily on my radar in terms of the film and video program, which is really strong, and the residency program, which continues to support artists in making work that maybe couldn't be made otherwise. So unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, I didn't have a fresh view of the place. I had a very sort of long relationship with it as one of the key institutions in this country and internationally to be working this way. That said, the moment that you think you might end up running a place, you put on a different set of glasses for sure. My visits here just reaffirmed for me how important the center is, and also how vital a role it plays here, I think, as a part of the community and part of a larger dialogue around art. So I simply got more excited the further along I got.
It has been stated in all of the interviews and all of the press surrounding your coming here that you were the unanimous choice of the selection committee, and that there were some pretty heavy hitters on that committee. That once they met, I don't know how many people and talked to your name came to the top relatively quickly. Can you give us an idea or tell us a little bit about your professional background before you came to Columbus? I know you were in New York, but
sure.
You were also working at Princeton and Columbia as well. Was that?
I was a graduate student at Princeton, and so I didn't work there except as a student teacher, but. I come from a pretty hybrid background, which is why I think the Wexner, again, is such a fit for me. I was raised in rural Nevada. It's not a hotspot for contemporary art, but I was lucky to be raised by by people who were really creative and open. I made my way to New York to go to graduate school, because that's where you go to graduate school for the arts. I went to Stony Brook, which was the one school that would take me from Reno, Nevada.
Very excellent music there.
And an excellent philosophy department as well. It's actually a fantastic school.
Yeah.
So I felt really lucky to land in this place that was New York, but wasn't quite New York City. Mm-hmm. I could get my feet, my bearings. Did a master's degree there in art history and criticism, mostly focusing on contemporary. And then I actually was so interested in what was left out of art historical narratives, which is the performing arts, that I started a degree at NYU that focused on live arts. It's called performance studies. So I spent a number of years thinking about that aspect of art and wondering why the two don't come together more often.
Could you just clarify what you mean by that? Do you mean installations or performing arts when you say live art?
Live art of all kinds, from music to radical experimental performance art to dance, pretty much anything. Some installation art, too. I think those lines are really getting crossed.
They are,
and often it's hard to say what something
is. Which is kind of good, I think.
It's fantastic. Yeah. But I will say, in art history, for a long time, it has been primarily dedicated to the visual arts, painting, sculpture. That's shifting, but it's relatively recently that that's true.
Which, by the way, the Wexner, as I understand it, has not been exclusively focused on the visual arts.
Not at all.
Right.
I mean, that's what's so strong about the center, is it was one of their very first, and I think remains one of the best, to be committed equally to film and video, to performing arts, and to the visual arts. None of these are placed on a higher plane than the others. And it's a real trick to talk about these things that you have different competencies and languages to address. So for me, that's really exciting. And it allows for artists to cross boundaries. So NYU allowed me to do some of that work. In the end, I went back to art history at Princeton because I really wanted a canon to push up against. And so I sort of meandered my way through a variety of educational platforms and found myself with a really kind of unique set of tools. So then, you know, in terms of job trajectory, I ended up running, I was the associate director of a program that's called the Whitney Independent Study Program, which is a fantastic Marxist feminist program, not at all neutral, that thinks about the politics of art. And then I ran a program at Bard, which is a curatorial studies master's program for a few years.
Did you know Leon?
Of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
You did.
Absolutely. Yeah, he was technically my boss.
I think it's wonderful that you and your work take a definite stand when you say there was a Marxist feminine track there, and it wasn't a hybrid. I mean, you were really getting into a corner there, which I think is wonderful. I mean, I like people, and I think creative people really have to say, this is really important. This is what we have to do, and be able to push that. So, and maybe ruffle some feathers along the way, which I think is what art is about. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, and I'm getting carried away because I'm really enjoying this conversation. I hope you all are, too, out there. Joanna Frankel is here, the concertmaster of the Columbus Symphony. Johanna Burton is here, the new director of the Wexner Center for the Arts. We'll be here until noon. We're taking a break. Don't go away.
WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, our producer, Kyle McKinnon. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. We are talking with Johanna Burton, who is the newly appointed director of the Wexner Center for the Arts, and Joanna Frankel, who is the concertmaster, the first chair violinist of the Columbus Symphony. She will play the violin that was owned by Niccolo Paganini that is coming to Columbus from the city of Genoa. She will play that on May 15th at the Ohio Theater. Why is it called the canon, Il Canone?
That is what Paganini termed it shortly after he started playing it, because he thought it had an enormous power, just like a cannon, but not just the power, as a cannon can fly through the air and, you know, create all kinds of different sounds as you're listening to the passage through the air of the cannon. The violin also has an enormous range of color, sound, volume, and expression.
You know your way around great instruments, so do you expect you're going to be impressed by this one, or are you going to say, dazzle me, come on?
I would absolutely expect to be impressed, and even if I didn't expect that, I would still certainly say that. but I am sure it's going to be able to offer me an enormous range of opportunity and option to as I'm kind of getting to know the instrument.
One thing I wanted to say, I've said this to you privately, but I want to say it on the air, is that when you first came to Columbus, I think you were in a trial period. You were trying to decide whether you really wanted to come full-time or whatever. And the concertmaster is the first person on stage before the concert begins. The concertmaster tunes the orchestra.
Yes.
You come out, you take a bow, you turn, and everybody tunes to your A on the violin, or you cue the oboe to
yes.
do that. The first couple of times that you came out, people, because I was in the audience, I mean, I was there, people were saying, who is that? You made a real impression by the way you came onto the stage.
Thank you.
And the way you took the stage. Part of it was saying, I'm here to get the orchestra going, but I'm also one of them. I'm in the orchestra.
Yes.
I'm part of the orchestra.
Yes.
I am not a separate deity, but I am here to do a job. And it was very authoritative in a wonderful way. And it made a real impression before you yourself ever played a note. Then people fell in love with you. But before
Thank
that,
you.
I just it was remarkable because the buzz and the conversation did. And people were calling me. I've never met her. I don't know who she is. I'm just yeah, I agree. She looks great. And she does a wonderful job. But anyway. But I think it's very important for the first person that they see walk on stage. Set a tone.
Yes.
That's a pun, but you know,
yes.
you know what I mean. And that happens with you. Again, your performance
you.
Of the Beethoven Violin Concerto conducted by Rosen Milanov with our Columbus Symphony Orchestra is heard on Classical 101 at 1 p.m. on May 12th. On Mother's Day, you have a 13-month-old. You're always tired, and that's fine. You have a 7-year-old. You're a little bit over it.
I'm still tired.
New challenges.
Still tired, but I must say, I mean, when you come in and you become the director of such a huge undertaking where it's every kind of art that one can imagine, from the visual to the oral to theater to dance to everything else, I wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, if you sit down on a Monday morning, well, probably you never get up, but I'm just saying when you start your day, how does that work?
Well, I should say one of the greatest and most exciting things that to happen since I started is I've inherited an amazing staff. The staff at the Wexner is incredible in its skill set, but also in its generosity. So these are folks who are deeply committed to the arts. They're deeply committed to the institution, and they've made my work, you know, easy is too strong a word, but they're already doing incredible work. And, you know, I feel like our job is to set the stage for artists to have room to do new things and to take risks. And because I have a staff who is so committed to that, I feel like I'm coming into my position really strongly armed to kind of conceive what the next you know, period of the Wexner looks like. So, you know, in terms of organizing my time, I've used this first 6 weeks to really get to know people, to get to know the program, to get to know people at OSU. And in fact, I wanted to say I got to hear Joanna perform at the Symphony Gala just about a week ago and was totally blown away.
Thank you.
An incredible
Thank you.
Performance. And also just seeing powerful women artists in this community is something that makes me very excited and to be a part of. And we're already starting to talk, I think, across institutions about collaborations, which is also part of this multidisciplinary tactic, I think.
It's very exciting.
And I believe I saw you at the groundbreaking for WOSU's new building.
It was there,
which was very, very good of you to come and join us for
that. I love public radio.
Yeah, and
on public everything.
And we're going to be neighbors. We're going to be across the street from each other. So that's terrific, too. That building scheduled, I believe, for the fall of 2020. So we are looking forward to working more closely with the Wexner Center and all the wonderful things you're going to do there.
We're delighted about it as well.
We have a call from Mark, who wants to talk about a balance of doing classical and other types of art. Hello, Mark. Are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
if I could, mostly for, if I got my name right, Joanna with the Columbus Symphony.
Right, Joanna Frankel, yes.
Yes,
and,
hi,
but
Mark.
also for the director at the Wexner. Theoretically, maybe the core mission of the symphony orchestra is to play a classical repertoire, which you might term very high culture, but to serve the community and, in a sense, pay the bills so the orchestra can continue its work and financially thrive. The orchestra does many other things, Picnic at the Pops, movie theme music, Disney music, rock music and things.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps somewhat the same at the Wexner, especially since you mentioned sort of the theoretical, idealistic Marxist feminist critique of things. On the business end of things, what is, I guess, either of your thoughts on that dichotomy between doing extremely high art and the thing that maybe more of the general public like that helps pay the bills? It wouldn't necessarily be your first choice
Mark,
an ideal world.
That's good. Let's have a conversation about that. We will ask you to listen, okay? Thank you. Well, what about, is there a balancing act between what I guess is more guaranteed to get people in the door than and what you really think is important to do?
Go ahead.
Joanna Burton?
I might clarify. I'm not saying the Wexner is a new platform for Marxist feminist thinking.
No,
I'm
sensibly
talking about my own background and,
right,
and
that's
trajectory.
Right.
That said, and to repeat what I said earlier, I think allowing platforms that have the most support for artists to explore whatever ideological, political, social ideas they're thinking about is what I'm interested in, and letting some of those conflict and be visible. I think it's really important that you reach a variety of audiences. And so in order to let people be experimental and risk-taking, you should also think about the impact of something like a blockbuster show that brings in many, many more people and may introduce them to art in a more comfortable way.
Andy Warhol did that for the Wexner. Yeah.
So and Warhol's a radical artist.
Sure.
He just happens to have been accommodated culturally for longer. So I'm of the mind that you do both those things and you just do them very well and you create a conversation between them.
Yes, I completely agree. I mean, I think in a musical standpoint, just what I've experienced is that, you know, you can play a Beethoven symphony, but if you pair that in a concert with, a new work that was written last year that has an interesting connection to the Beethoven, that really opens up pathways that the audience might understand the Beethoven better. Mm-hmm. I find Mozart an unbelievable pairing with all kinds of new
Mozart
music.
Goes with everybody, doesn't it?
I mean, it's because Mozart's such a genius and there's everything in there.
Right.
But when you pair things, when you really show a plethora of a diversity, you see older kind of, as you say, Mark, high art, you see it in a new, different way. And this helps, this is really, I think, our responsibility somehow to our patrons, to our loyal supporters to really, you know, give them something new to think about, show them a Beethoven in a new light, illuminate mm-hmm. something. And that's really important. And, you know, in terms of the programming that the orchestra's been doing with trying to, you know, really highlight more women composers, more new composers, I think it really works in that way.
I remember years ago interviewing the great soprano, the late Joan Sutherland, who said to me on the air, "Don't forget, dear, we are entertainers." And she said she had no trouble with the E word. She had singing Mozart and Verdi. She had no trouble saying, "I want people to come in and have a reaction mm-hmm. and leave better than they were two
yes.
hours before when they came in for whatever reason." And,
yes.
and that's what I strive to do. But I also think, Joanna Burton, I think I'm of the opinion that the arts almost have an obligation to be provocative in a way.
Absolutely.
To really start a conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the entertainment question is an interesting one because to be entertained, one doesn't have to be reassured of the opinions that you hold.
Or laugh. I mean, you don't have – right. There are different ways of being entertained.
Of course, laughter is immensely helpful too. But I think, you know, my feeling is you bring people in and you meet them halfway. I think the biggest problem is when you don't contextualize or offer an entry point. I think discomfort's fine, but make sure that that person doesn't feel it's a deficit on their end. So I think our job as civic leaders is to provide a place where people can feel uncomfortable comfortably.
And one of the most wonderful things the Wexner has done over the years is in the summer, they show movies on the platform in the summertime. And
the drive-in.
There are food trucks entering the drive-ins, and they think, like, Gimme Shelter, things that someone my age remembered, you know, going back there. They were, and they bring a very large and very varied crowd. I mean, there are babies there, and there are, there are grandparents there. That to me is sort of, we're opening up the front yard to the community.
Right.
Just show up. Buy an ice cream or a glass of wine and enjoy. And people do.
And we are doing that again. We're going to show Jurassic Park this summer.
Good, because my wife wanted me to ask you what your show
is.
Linda, write that down. Jurassic Park is what, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and two other movies as well. But I think what is really key about those kinds of opening the building up and letting people see that the Wexner goes beyond the walls is this is a community space. It is a public space, and it's a space that does many, many different things. And I love that. I think it's key, it's crucial, and it's a way to welcome people in to the center and find things that may be of interest to different communities and different different people.
The new museum from which you came most recently in New York is an institution, I believe, about 40 years old.
That's right.
But it's in a new building or a more recent building.
It's a 10-year-old building.
I understand. Yeah. Well, that's pretty new for contextually. Do you think for a long time the Wexner Center itself, the building itself was the destination, the building was the museum piece, which I imagine was good and bad. I think we're a little bit over that now. I think people get it and they want to go inside. But are you concerned about that at all?
I'm not concerned. I think it's really interesting that the sort of body that holds the art is so significant and that people come to see it. But I think the Wexner Center is best known for its programming at this point. And I think for the next phase of what happens as the arts district evolves, it will be really interesting to play with how that building sits in the middle of 15th and High.
Right. Well, it'll be the centerpiece as it is with the community now, but it's certainly all the more so. You mentioned earlier that the residency program that goes on at the Wexner Center, where very distinguished people come and they stay, they move in, they live for a number of months, they teach, they make themselves available to the community, and their work comes with them. One thinks of Anne Bogart with the City Company, great theater company.
Absolutely.
Baryshnikov has been here a couple of times. Tell me if you have any ideas, or first of all, explain better than I just did what the residency program is and where you think that's going to be in your planning as things go on.
There are a variety of sort of residencies within the center itself. The one that's the most sort of stable in its articulation is the film and video residency, where people come and they either produce or depending on where they are in the process, they're sometimes finishing, they're sometimes starting production of film and video. And over the years, there have been people, some incredibly significant people have come through, Sadie Benning. Currently, the Barbara Hammer show that's about to come up that Jennifer Lang, our amazing curator, made. She helped with six of Barbara Hammer's residencies over the last 27 years. Barbara just passed away.
Yeah.
And so there are those residencies. But then to your point, there are just these opportunities for artists to come and become part of the community.
It's good for them.
It's good for them and to evolve projects that they might not have an opportunity to do. So short answer to your question, I think residencies and working closely with artists within the community is more and more rare and more needed. So giving people time, space, and just support. So I think that's going to be a major strand of what we continue to hone as one of our key signature elements.
Aside from being a neighbor and being on campus, what is the relationship now with The Ohio State University, and where do you think it might need to go?
Again, I think we're, the center of the campus. I think it's interesting that our immediate community of students, some people are incredibly passionate about the place. Others, I think we need to get in the building. So, that's a key question for me as I start this job, is how to embed myself at OSU, how to find stakeholders within the faculty and within the student body. It's been very easy on the one hand. I have incredible friends already on faculty. Anne Hamilton has been a patron saint of...
And Hamilton was my sister's mentor,
so
I know a lot about her.
She has single-handedly really, I think, created, a kind of circle of support around a lot of people, including myself. But I can name others, too. Lisa Florman in art history, Carmen Winant, who's a photography professor. But I'd like to get outside the arts, too. Like, let's talk to public policy. Let's you know, get engaged with the law school. And I've been very lucky. Bruce McFerrin, who is my immediate supervisor and the provost, has been really engaged with me onboarding and starting to have ideas about how I can be more integrated into the college and or to the university and therefore soak in the WEX.
And there is going to be it's actually a bona fide arts district that's going to be built up and put in as your neighbors in the next couple of years, you will be the centerpiece of that, certainly, which will, you know, all kinds of different disciplines will probably feed into the Wexner Center and go out of it as well. It
right.
goes both ways.
As it should be.
As it should be. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Joanna Frankel, I just want to review that you are playing a violin owned by Nicola Paganini, which is a national treasure, certainly in Italy, and is literally kept. I think it's brought out once a year.
That sounds about right.
It is kept under lock and key. It's traveled very rarely.
Yes.
From Genoa, but it is coming to Columbus in May because we are a sister city to Genoa.
Yes.
The mayor of Genoa and some of his staff are coming along with it, along with some cops.
Yes.
and an armored plane. But you, the person playing it was Salvatore Accardo. So Accardo and Joanna are the two people who are playing this violin right now.
Well, I think I'm going to be... There's a long line of distinguished, very distinguished violinists who have had the opportunity to play this instrument over the years. And so really my main feeling is just humility that I've been invited to do this.
Well, we're delighted and we'll be in the theater for that. We're going to hear a little bit right now as we go out to our next break. We'll be back in about 1 minute with our final segment of today's All Sides Weekend. Don't go away. We are back for our final segment of today's All Sides Weekend. I'm Christopher Purdy with Joanna Frankel, the concertmaster, the violinist of the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, and Johanna Burton, the director of the Wexner Center for the Arts. If you would like to talk with our guests, you have a comment or a question, you are welcome to call right now, 614-292-8513, or send an email to allsides@wosu.org. That's 292-8513. Johanna Burton was very busily looking up what the movies are going to be this summer, which are?
Jurassic Park, Logan's Run, and The Craft. I just want to make sure my film curator, Dave.
Dave.
I put the plug in.
Dave Filippi. Joanna was busily looking that up, so be encouraged there. It's going to be out in the front plaza of the Wexner Center at night in the summertime with food trucks, and it's a wonderful community event. All you have to do is bring a chair and show up.
Yeah, it's great. And as you said, it's for everybody.
Right.
And it's a great time.
Right. So we have that. We talked about a little bit about residencies and... Is it fair to ask you percentages of the Wexner Center presentations are 20% theater and 60% the visual arts? I mean, is that even a germane question?
It's an interesting question, but it's hard to answer. It's about pacing. So, you know, an exhibition is up for 3.5 months, and we show, you know, in film and video, for instance, 180 films a year. So how do you think about you know, quantity in that way. So I think percentages wise, we would say that we have much fewer exhibitions, but they're perhaps more visible. I also think, you know, one exciting thing with the current configuration is that we're veering towards really, again, this balance of, you know, really impactful shows by bigger name artists, but also allowing them to work experimentally alongside younger folks too. So it's hard to say. All of our curators are incredibly busy, I'll put it that way. And the amount of production that happens at that institution is impressive to me.
When I want to get one of them on this program, I generally have to give about an 8 week.
I bet you do. And, yes.
Well, we'll pencil you in, but
yes.
and they're worth waiting for. Let me tell
Wonderful.
You.
Wonderful. I couldn't agree more.
Every single one worth waiting for. Joanna Frankel, tell me more about your life in music, if you have time to have one, and you may not, because the Columbus Symphony is very demanding, and you are a very big part of that. But aside from that, your life as a musician here and not here?
My history is pretty varied. Honestly, most of my professional career since school has been more in chamber music and recitals and concertos. And I toured with a dance company, Mark Morris.
Yeah. What do you mean, a dance company?
The dance company.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Another resident, by the way. Uh-huh.
And committed to live music during performance, which is some of the most exciting concerts I've ever done, because you absolutely cannot make a mistake if you're playing with dancers. And I was in South Africa for 4 years with the orchestra, but also did a lot of chamber music there. So in general, my history has been pretty diverse. And luckily, now that I'm in Columbus, I do continue to do different things. I play chamber music with my colleagues. I've played at the Mozart and Matisse, at the museum,
indeed,
which is a wonderful series. Probably going to be continuing to do that next season. I was just in New York. I still continue to play with an alumni group of Carnegie Hall, because I was a fellow of Carnegie Hall for 3 years, working on 21st century artist advocacy and working in a public school and really trying to bring classical music to the forefront of young people and more people and diverse people. So I think that, of course, my work now now that I have a baby, I'm definitely focused on my work here with the orchestra and really trying to, you know, really bring the best quality I can to all of the performances. But I'm also always looking outward and looking at different ways that I can really enrich that. So I'm performing the orchestral repertoire, but I'm also, you know, next season I'll be performing the Jennifer Higdon Concerto with New Albany. So it's I'm always kind of trying to find diverse things to do, and not just one thing, but I feel very energized to really do different things and different kinds of music.
Jennifer Higdon is a recent Pulitzer Prize winner in music.
Yes.
She's been in residence at Ohio State about 10 years ago and made a wonderful impression here in the community. So that's great. Where did you grow up, and how old were you when somebody put a violin in your hand probably four?
Well, I grew up outside of Philadelphia, and my parents are both were at the time both public school teachers, which is where they met. But they both were, you know, very, very open. Sounds similar to Johanna's parents. Just to arts and culture. And when I was two, my father took myself and my sisters to a Suzuki violin concert at a Suzuki school near our house because he needed something to do with the afternoon.
Explain what that is, Suzuki violin.
Suzuki violin is a young child's method of learning an instrument. It happens a lot by rote and ear training. So you're not reading music for many years, but you're developing your ears. Well, as many years as I guess your teacher perceives is good, but it really develops your ears, and it's a strategy to really get a lot of children learning the instruments. So we went to one of these concerts, and I was two, and then I asked for a violin for a year. And finally, after a year, when I was three,
tiny violin, right?
Yes, it was a 16th size, if you can imagine. It was, you know, very, very small. Well, first they give you a Kleenex box to make sure you won't, you know, when you're three, you won't like throw the instrument. So that went okay. And so then I started on a 16th size when I was three. And just my mother happens to be just a very savvy she kind of curated my study. So she helped find teachers. I studied downtown with the Philadelphia Orchestra members and with Yasha Brodsky, who was a famous teacher at Curtis when I was 11. I then moved to his assistance. I really feel that I learned to play the violin in Philadelphia. I really have an affinity for, you know, that style and that course of study. And then when I went to college, I went to Juilliard. And so then I was there for 6 years. I've set my sights on really trying to learn lots of repertoire and different repertoire. And I played a lot of early music and a lot of contemporary music. I also really was like, I really missed the academics of my high school. So I went to Columbia and I took history courses and I took French. I took a seminar in De Tocqueville and Russian history and Greek history. So I was just always looking to really just enrich myself as much as I could, being in such an incredible city with so much to offer.
You're always curious, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so that's kind of, and then after I graduated from my master's degree at Juilliard, I entered a 3-year Carnegie Hall fellowship. And then after that, I started traveling more and touring and doing recitals. And then one of the international residencies we did with Carnegie Hall was in Durban, South Africa. And at the time, they were looking for a concertmaster. And I was asked to audition, and one thing led to another. And then I was in South Africa for 4 years, which was incredibly fascinating. Learned a few Zulu words, learned a few Afrikaans words. Monkeys broke into our apartment, ate our bananas. It's completely true. And yeah, it was just quite a fascinating time. And it was where I met Rostislav Milanov. And we played the Beethoven concerto together there. And after that, I made my way to Columbus.
And here you are making a great impression, playing the Beethoven concerto again. Johanna Burton, I am fascinated. You alluded to your upbringing with two they sound fascinating, your parents. They just anything kind of went, any kind of interest that you may have exhibited, they were encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, my parents are pretty unique in that they are the kind of embodiment of countercultural artists. They live in the middle of the desert because they don't really want to have to interact with too many people. But
sounds like heaven.
I grew up with a lot of animals and a lot of space. Yeah. And when it became clear I wanted to be in the arts, they didn't push back on me, which is significant. So,
if you had to put a dot on your passport, your occupation, what would you put? What would you write if you had to make it two or three words? My God, what would you say with your background and all the things that you've already done?
It's interesting. I've always sort of triangulated between scholarship, education, and curating. So writing is a significant part of my practice, and one that I'm going to continue. But I do think moving into a director's role it's very, very important to make some of those things and your own viewpoints less apparent, in the sense that what I like to think about as this next phase of my life is facilitating to the best of my ability the success of the curators and the artists and the community members that I'm serving. So that's nice, and I feel like I'm at a point in my life where I don't have to constantly be the voice in the room. I want to be the space that provides opportunities for other voices. And I think Joanna pointed to this too. This is a moment where we really need to be listening to our communities and reassessing who takes up space and what kind of space and thinking about diverse audiences with a real sensitivity and a real commitment.
But the job you have now, I would assume part of your job is literally keeping the lights on. What happens?
Absolutely.
What happens if the plumbing goes in one of the bathrooms? Well, you know, that's going to go on your desk.
I get the text messages. We've had a lot of, a lot of rain. So
yeah.
I'm keeping my eyes on whether we have leaks.
So you're right.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's really true. You are a steward of an institution, the same way that if you own art, you are a steward of that art. And so I take really seriously being the person who looks after this institution. And like I said, I feel incredible joy and pleasure in inheriting a place that is already top of its game and taking it to the next level. But yes, there's a lot of keeping the lights on.
Sure. Yeah. And also, you said it's important to listen to the community. You've not been here very long, but so far, what have you heard?
So I've been out a lot, as you know. I mean, what I've heard so far is, again, a real engagement in a sort of civic, what feels like a civic mission. The city's growing so fast, and I think people are really kind of aware of what it's been and what it can be. So I'm just listening to other arts leaders talk about the ramifications of that for better and for worse. I want to understand what the artists locally are thinking about and how to integrate them into the program. And then it's just really curious to see what people have been committed to the Wexner, as many, many people in the community have been, what they've loved there, what they would like to see more of. And what I do hear from them a lot is keep doing what you're doing, but also maybe go out into the community more. So really, I'm excited about things like having conference series or having more lectures, bringing people in to talk about pressing issues. This is a moment where people really feel, to me, like they are valuing one-to-one exchange and having conversations as the world sort of evolves.
I know Dave Filippi, your film curator,
yes,
and a number of his colleagues, too, in their departments have had whole days for school-age kids.
That's right.
They've had, and they come in, they don't pay, they come in, there's a lot of them, and they cater films and events and presentations to these age groups. Mm-hmm. And the best way to do that, as you know better than I do, is to give them paper and pencil. I mean, make mm-hmm. let them do things. Let That's them right. get active rather than sit and having to listen to something.
That's right.
And I know in the past that that has been something that has done a great deal of good and been very, very important. And I would assume that that's something you're interested in continuing, maybe growing on.
It's key.
Well.
I mean, I'm an educator.
Yeah, that's
so,
your, right.
And, you know, our education department is fantastic
Shelley
at the
Antis.
Wexner.
Yeah,
and the programs that have been evolved by that team are incredible. And I think putting even more light on the kind of work that's being done with all levels, actually, of education, whether it's kids or youth or, you know, there's incredible programs at the Wexner for veterans at this point, you know, for people who have had brain injuries. There's a really a fascinating trajectory.
I was going to ask you that, if there was room or interest in programs with the suffix therapy attached to them for people who are maybe have brain injuries or people who could benefit in a recovery way from exposure to the arts.
Absolutely. One of our educators, Tracy, is, you know, very engaged. And I should say many, many people on our staff have expressed interest and have worked into their previous work and their current work at the WEX, ways to address access, inclusion, mm-hmm. diversity, all of these things in really clear-cut and, I think, really surprising ways. I think more and more artists should be seen as integrated with well-being and health. But also it's a way of allowing people to think about futures that maybe they haven't considered. So on top of just, you know, bodily health and kind of thinking about, for instance, a recent piece that was produced by Ann Carlson, who's also been at the WEX several times and took on food ecologies. You know, I think people are just realizing that art makes us feel better and have the capacity to imagine other ways forward. So I think this is a key part of what we're doing, which is just using art as central rather than peripheral.
Do you ever come across people saying, well, you know, I know where the building is, I go by it every day, but I'm a little intimidated.
Yes,
I don't
of course.
Go in.
Yeah. Absolutely. How,
what do you say to that?
I mean, contemporary art is challenging for right. people. And I think to our earlier point, that's what's wonderful about it. And it's also the thing that you want people to say, like, and I want to be part of that challenge. I want to think about it. So one way to engage people is through these topics that feel urgent to them. And, you know, not every show is going to be for every person. But I do think we're currently just looking at ways to make the entry points to the museum, for instance, more legible. Just come on in, or opening up to the outside of the building in the ways that we're talking about with the film series. But yeah, of course, for some people, contemporary art is going to always be challenging. But interestingly, it's the art of our time. So those challenges are keyed to what's happening around us.
Well, I'm not somebody who knows much about contemporary art. And I've been to the Wexner a number of times because I'm married to somebody who loves contemporary art. So I'm
lucky you. Secret,
yeah, really. But I always learn something in a very positive way. I always come out having really enjoyed my time and having seen something or heard something I've never heard. And at this point in my life, I would rather experience something I've never heard before than
yeah.
hear something that I can pull off a shelf in my home or in my office or whatever. So that to me is a great gift of the Wexner Center and the programs there. And I thank you, Johanna Burton, for being here and curating this property that's dear to Columbus and certainly has an international stature that you're only going to increase. And we
thank you so
very
much.
Grateful to have you with us. And thank you so much.
I'm so excited to be here.
Welcome and
thank you.
Good luck with moving.
yeah, well, I need it.
And Joanna Frankel, the Columbus Symphony 2 is there for everybody. They are in the Ohio Theater. They are in the Southern Theater once in a while.
Yes.
By the way, and I always tell people that the concerts that you attend of an evening are about 30% of what the orchestra does.
Yes.
Because not only are you rehearsing all the time, you're also the whole band, all 80 whatever, goes out to schools, you
yes.
run out concerts. You're all over the place. So accessibility shouldn't be a question because you're already doing it.
That, you know, it's true. It's true. But we're always working to make everything more accessible. And I think, like just like Johanna was saying, you know, that's always a concern to get people to just make people feel like they can come in and be comfortable and that they can know everything about classical music or they can know nothing about mm-hmm. classical music. music and there will be a place for them, which is absolutely true. And I think one of our big missions is, you know, creating diverse offerings. But I think when you're creating diverse offerings, people are able to then see diversity in themselves, which right. is, I think, one of the most important things about arts offerings. And it's something that can make you know yourself better. So there is something for everyone if you know about it or if you don't know about it.
And I promise you all one thing. You will leave either of these institutions humming in a major key. Thank you very much, Johanna Burton from the Wexner Center. Joanna Frankel, thank you very much. Il Canone is May 15th at the Ohio Theater. Kyle McKinnon, our associate producer, thank you. Mary Lee Williams, our producer, thank you very much. Thank you all for listening. Radio Operations Director is Kevin Petrella. Senior Broadcast Technician, Eric French. I'm Christopher Purdy. Now, good afternoon.